veil of light, softly drawn. The ground beneath, refreshingly cool. Mists descend like gentle drapes, as if to hold all the falling rain. It drifts down from every direction. Trees flow endlessly, a silent tide. The land is filled, mountains and deep valleys, where profound depths give birth to life. Wildflowers, herbs, a green tapestry, trees of every size standing tall. Pardon my intrusion. May I offer alms? A soft whisper from behind him. He walked out from the dense woods halfway up Mont Yu. The sky suddenly cleared, as if dawn had broken, the air crisp. It was early summer, but felt like an autumn moon in daylight. Kosaka, who had been gazing at the sun over distant peaks, turned back in utter surprise. To hear a human voice, to see a face, he hadn't dreamt of it. He was deep in the mountains, far from any village. Yet it was a woman who called out to him. But Kosaka, with just a glance, knew immediately she meant no harm. She held her white fingertips to her lips, in a respectful gesture. Head bowed, as if listening to sutras, she offered alms. "No, I am not a monk," he declined casually. He stopped and looked at her, from her snow-white earlobes to her softly rounded cheeks, tied with a deep asagi blue ribbon. It held the hue of dewy morning glories, shaded by a deep kaga hat. A flower basket on her back, gaiters on her legs, dressed lightly. He gazed upon her graceful, beautiful form. From beneath her hat, she seemed to look right through him. "Oh, I'm terribly sorry for my presumption. Your appearance isn't at all like one, but you recite such a beautiful sutra, so I thought, even if not a monk, you must be a practitioner." He wore a suit with gaiters on his legs. His hat was pulled low, a small furoshiki bundle carried saigyo style. His name was Mitsuyuki, a student of medicine. He held an opened half verse of the Lotus Sutra's medicinal herbs in his left palm. Lifting the sturdy staff under his right arm, he spoke. "Well, I am a practitioner of sorts, but purely an amateur. I can't accept alms. My recitation? It's mostly from Zhu Xi's commentaries on the Great Learning. It's too grand to call it a sacred sutra. But this mountain has many herbs. Perhaps it's just my imagination." After walking a ri or so from the foothills, the wind carries a refreshing herbal scent that seeps into my very being. So with a quiet wish, I recite what I've recently learned as I walk. Thinking honesty was best for them both right now, Kosaka spoke to her kindly first, then asked, "Sister, do you live in a village at the foot of the mountain?" "Yes, I am from Futamata village." "Ah, that place. On the road to Kakenami in Echu, where our path diverges. Where horses pass so busily. That's it, isn't it?" "That's right, sir. The road is too rough now. Carts can no longer pass. So all the charcoal and firewood must be carried by horses. And from Tomuroguchi, like a stone gate to this mountain, stones are quarried. All are moved by horses, one person leading five at a time." "So you came from the foothills all alone then?" Kosaka, who had been walking quietly, looked at the woman's face once more. "Yes, I am alone, and you are the only person I've seen until now." With a knowing look, he nodded. "I too, well, it was about half a ri back. I met an old woodcutter and asked for directions, but besides him, it's just you. I never thought I'd see a soul here, going or coming back." This area was a gentle blue expanse, a vast grassy sea stretching like an ocean. "Hey, every word echoes here. Such a lonely place. How did you come alone?" She pressed both hands against the wide pink ribbons crossed over her chest. Adjusting her flower basket, she said, "You did well to ask the woodcutter. It's not a very steep slope, but hardly anyone passes this way. So it's truly hard to find your way. To enter this mountain, whose depths are unknown, a mere stone as a landmark isn't enough, is it? If it said Mont Yu Trail north or south, that would be different. But it's just a big, rough stone lying in the riverbed, and behind it, a narrow path hidden beneath the grass. The woodcutter said one wrong turn, and you wouldn't reach the summit in half a year. Why is this mountain kept such a secret anyway? Is there truly no other path than the one behind that stone?" "No, there isn't, sir. If you just know this path, it's merely the loneliness of being far from the world, and there are no scary beasts. But if you take even one wrong step, you might end up in a valley thousands of feet deep, a dead end, or hit a sheer cliff face. Rocks might block the stream, or fallen trees obstruct your way. And the denser the growth, the more venomous insects will swarm, making it so difficult. You can either go back the way you came, or make your way out to Kurikara Pass. Then you can safely return to some country. But if you don't, and force your way further, you'll eventually reach a burnt mountain, barren of all growth, and it's said people starve there. Indeed, just as you said, the stone shown by the woodcutter is called the Cornerstone of Io. It stretches out endlessly, reaching even to Haida, a symbol of eternal prosperity. Step off it just once and the path will truly scatter into fragments. It was a famous, secret mountain in the northern land, and I thought, so it must be. But then I wondered, but if this is truly Mount Io, where medicinal herbs grow so abundantly, why is it so secluded from the world, with no passage through? Well, I heard it's because this mountain has been a forbidden area for the Lord since ancient times, and people were rarely allowed to enter. It's not just the Lord, you see. I believe that in places where precious medicines grow, the guardian deities and Buddhas also forbid entry and exit. It sounded as if there were strange spirits in this realm of immortals, who would not permit anyone to freely gather medicinal herbs. This weighed heavily on my mind. So if someone like me were to enter, would it be wrong to gather the desired herbs in return? Kosaka's mood seemed to darken slightly at this, but a shiver of dread ran through him, leaving him chilled. He inadvertently muttered a prayer under his breath. Wise clouds holding moisture. Lightning flashes brightly. Thunder rumbles in the distance, bringing joy to all as sunlight is obscured. The ground cools, and dense clouds hang low, as if to be embraced. No, as long as you don't harm the mountain, it is said that anyone can come without trouble. Where there are medicinal herbs, there are also poisonous ones. If reckless people gather them, who knows what mistakes might occur? That's probably why warning signs have been posted since ancient times. Since you recite sutras, I don't believe you'll have any worries, even if you should be caught by nightfall on the mountain. She paused, then came closer again. Oh, by the way, are you here to gather herbs for medicine? It's a rather desperate wish, but you see, I have a sick family member, and the doctor's medicine simply won't cure them. This Mount Io is the only place, so I came here to find the herb I have in mind. And you, miss, from what I see, are you here to pick flowers? As you can see, I sell flowers. Every 2 or 3 days, I come to collect flowers from the mountain, then take them down to the village to sell. Right now is the peak season for all sorts of flowers. There's a large pond at the summit, called Senshuga Ike, Pond of 1,000 Snakes, as vast as a sea. And along this mountain path, no clear springs flow anywhere. Instead, when it's hot and your throat is parched, you can pick the shaded grass with small blue flowers. Chew its leaves, and it feels as cold as if you've drunk a whole bucket of icy water. Without it, you can barely endure, as water is scarce in this place. While irises, rabbit ear irises, and cow lilies are not found here, azaleas, globe flowers, peonies, shakuyaku, chrysanthemums, bell flowers, and patrinia, they all bloom together here, from June until the end of August. From these peonies and shakuyaku, such splendid flowers can be gathered, bringing a generous income. Oh, how truly beautiful they must be. And you, where do you plan to gather the herbs you seek? She asked him intimately, peering from under her straw hat. For a moment, her clear eyes briefly appeared. Kosaka somehow felt as though he had met a shepherd boy from a tale who would guide him to an immortal's home in a secluded realm. His words became naturally polite and earnest. I intend to go there too. A place where flowers of all 4 seasons bloom at once. What is it called? It is called Bijogahara, the field of beautiful women. Bijogahara? Yes, it's written as beautiful woman. The woman looked down, a hint of shyness on her face, and smiled in a graceful, modest way. He turned back, captivated by her charm. Oh, she exclaimed, tilting her sleeve askew, clutching her kimono's bottom hem. Look, oh, just look! Scattered, 5 or 3 crimson petals dotted her grass-dyed left sleeve. Was it a fallen feather of a mountain bird? No. A butterfly? No. A spider? No. It was indeed the fallen petals of cherry blossoms. Isn't it curious? For the past 2 or 3 months, cherry blossoms have been fluttering down ceaselessly from who knows where. Yet we cannot find where these cherry trees are. When you go to Bijogahara, you can overlook Noto Cape 10 ri to the south, Mount Tateyama of Etchu 7 ri to the north, and Kaga behind you. Even though there's no mist or fog at this time of year, there are no flower-laden branches that could be mistaken for these. Perhaps these petals have escaped from the bustling towns and are simply playing here. Or perhaps they are envoys, wandering through the mountains on some errand. As the woman gazed upwards, Kosaka also stretched himself tall, rising from within the tangle of weeds. The green of the grass deepened, reflecting the clouds upside down. Or perhaps it was the sky, a color like the bottom of a deep lake, holding a sacred and mysterious aura, visible only as a faint purple. How far is it to Bijogahara? Can we get there before sunset? No. The way these cherry blossoms are falling means it's right nearby. I will accompany you there, and though I have company like you today, I usually go alone. So I return to the village at the end of the day. At the end of the day? Kosaka found this utterly unexpected. The woodcutter had told me it was a very distant place, an incredibly long journey. Oh, there's no need to ask a woodcutter. I know the way perfectly well. First, you must walk through the mountains for about 2 or 3 days. I've often wondered about the climb, how long it truly takes. Though they whisper a full day or just ahead, I can't imagine reaching it so swiftly. Just look at us now, walking free and whole. We haven't stumbled into valleys deep, nor tripped on jagged stone. Our clothes remain unbroken. Not a single nail has peeled away. We came prepared, yet hunger doesn't touch us. Nor do we thirst for that blue-flowered herb, searching desperately. Of course, we don't know what hardships may lie ahead. But we're with you, sister, on a day trip from the village, gathering flowers. It doesn't feel like dusk will suddenly descend, plunging us into darkness. So is it truly just a few more steps, and we'll reach Bijogahara? Oh, it's nothing at all. You knew it was such a daunting place, and yet you came to gather medicine. He replied deeply, "Indeed, I came risking my very life." The woman softly said, "Then it must be for something truly vital. But it's not such a treacherous mountain. Yet this place is called a sacred mountain. It's not a place to spill sake or discard bamboo peelings carelessly. Rather, like a revered temple garden, a shrine precinct, or the inner grounds of a noble's gate. Even if no stones impede your path, you must tread with reverence. And you speak of a special herb in Bijogahara, saying it feels like it would take 2 or 3 days to reach it. Have you ever climbed this path before?" "Yes, once. Oh my. It must have been Bijogahara for sure. I remember azaleas, camellias, chrysanthemums, wisteria, a whole field in bloom. But not knowing the landmarks, or even which direction was which, I was lost in a daze. Even now, I am still from this very land. But then, I had left home for over a month, venturing deep into the mountains. It felt as if half my life, from birth to death, had passed before I finally saw that place." As Kosaka spoke, memories surfaced of that long, arduous journey, exposed to rain and dew. Even now, feeling faint and weary, his spirit tired. Though his mind held no earthly worries in these deep mountains, sweat still trickled down his back. The path was like a narrow thread, and carrying his voice behind him took effort. He clutched the yakuhan to his chest, with the hand holding his staff. He removed his hat. Then he wiped his serene brow. Her sharp eyes noticed, and she quickly offered, "If you wish for guidance, I shall walk ahead. Please, it would be easier for me to hear your story that way." Without a word, she lifted her straw sandals and stepped aside to the left of the path. Beneath her feet, soft grass roots cushioned her steps, and leaf tips concealed her shins. No thorns snagged her hem. Heaven and earth were silent. Not even a whisper of insect wings. "Excuse me," the flower seller murmured, regretfully letting flower petals fall from her sleeve. She drew her sleeves to her chest, making herself slender. She squeezed past Kosaka. One foot disappeared into the dense bindweed. The path was indeed that narrow. Just 5 feet ahead, she gracefully stood upright again, her back to him. The skirt-like foliage, green nearby and distant pale blue, painted by the sun's hues, was not overshadowed by the long shadow of a single towering tree. From behind he called out, "The grass is getting quite deep now." "The summit is drawing nearer," she replied. "Soon this growth will reach a man's height, and my figure will vanish from your sight." The place you emerge from after passing through it, that will be the flower field. Her shoulders gently sloped. The sedge hat's strap hung loose. With lips like crimson, she turned her face to him. A smile played in her clear eyes as she asked, "Why do you imagine it so far, as if traveling to Tang China or India?" Kusaka roughly steadied his staff, yet continued cautiously behind her, without disturbing the earth. "It was a long time ago," he began. "Everyone perceives old memories as distantly separated by time. Perhaps I see the path itself as distant, along with the events. At first, it all feels like a dream, yet it was undeniably real. My time gathering herbs in Bijogahara, long ago, it was 20 years ago. A decade is an old time. So it was roughly 2 old times ago, that summer when I was 9. Oh, so young you were then. I wasn't alone, of course. I was led there by someone. When I first wandered from home, barely 9, I couldn't tell east from west, just a lost child. People said Kusaka no Mitsu, that's my name, Mitsubu, had been seized by demons. It's what they call here, being carried off by a tengu. Perhaps it was true, but in my child's heart, I felt I was thinking of my parents. Both my parents were still alive then. My mother was gravely ill by the onset of summer's heat. The doctors had already given up hope. It was out of a desperate desire to cure her that I came seeking medicine. Kusaka fell silent for a moment. Speaking like this might sound like boasting of filial piety, which I know is not good. But sister, I tell this only to you. Today, there are fine doctors and hospitals. But even with the castle town spread 2 leagues in all directions, in these northern mountains, there was no proper doctor to be found. Back then, even the most esteemed local physician had given up. To be frank, it wasn't something Father would tell us directly. They told me to be quiet. My mother's sickness was so bad. But somehow, through the silent comings and goings, and every hushed movement in the house, I knew it was a serious illness. And that famous doctor, he was about 50 years old. Bald on top, yet with dark hair, a pale complexion. A slick, elegant man, he moved with a strange grace. When he took a pulse or opened his umbrella, he'd curl his pinky using just 3 fingers, like someone playing a flute or a courtesan with a pipe. He was a man I truly disliked. I would often run to fetch the medicine, living so close. And the pharmacy, it was run by the doctor's nephew, they said. A man with a long, thin face and a nose tip so red it seemed rouge had dripped down from his brow. He'd pull out small drawers from the medicine chest, spread papers on the desk, then mix the compounds. But his measuring, the way he handled the spoon, it always seemed so terribly suspicious.